You are listening to an online message from Limbrookwood Baptist Church. For more messages, upcoming events and weekly activities, please visit www.lwbc.org.uk. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter by searching Limbrookwood BC. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, so it's lovely to be here speaking again tonight. I spoke on trust all the way back in January. I'm not sure you remember that. But as it's part of our 60th anniversary, I thought, where do we go from here? And obviously the thing that we're always called to do by God is to share our faith. So that's my subject for tonight. But particularly wanted to look at that passage from 1 Corinthians, Paul's first letter to the church at Corinth, and that bit about when he talks about being all things to all men or to all people, depending on the translation. And what does he mean by that? And what does it mean for us here as individuals and as a church here in Limbrookwood? And I wanted you to start thinking, I suppose the challenge is to think about where you find yourself now. Where has God put you in this world and in this life at this present moment? Because you're in your particular situation in your life, particular time in your life, where God has put you there for a reason. Because we're all called by God. It's not just people who are ministers or pastors. It's every single person who's part of the church. God has a plan for each one of us. And God has put you in this particular place at this particular time, surrounded by the people that you know and encounter for a reason. And we're all called to exercise that calling. Can I have the next slide, please, Morris? So that's where God's put me at the moment. So that's a bomb disposal van. I'm there with my companion, aren't I? My pastoral assistant, Drake, the dog. Thanks, Terry. Yeah, he's also in chaplain's colours, black and purple, as in my belt as well. And Drake doesn't do any bomb disposal, but he's very useful in getting people to talk and open up. And because when he's with me, people come to speak to Drake, even if they won't come and speak to me. But God has called me to be an army chaplain, and I've been called to be in this particular situation working with people in bomb disposal. But that's where I find myself. But where do you find yourself is the question. And how do you exercise your ministry, your calling from God? Because we all have been put in our places because that's where God wants us to be now. Thanks, Horace. Yeah, so we all live in society, don't we? Whatever we do, we cannot be independent, self-sustaining. No man is an island, I think, is the phrase, isn't it? That we're surrounded by other people. We encounter other people in our lives. We live in society. What does that mean for Christians? It means if you look at that verse in Matthew's Gospel, which I put on there, if you've got a Bible, but I'll read it for you in any case. And it's a verse I come back to again and again. And it says, it's Matthew 5 and verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the salt of the earth. The words of Jesus to his followers. We are the salt of the earth. And the Romans had a saying that there's nothing more valuable than sun and salt. The sun obviously gives that whole, you know, makes plants grow and all the things they needed. But the salt was the thing that gives the flavor. And so salt was so important and precious. It also preserved things as well, but they were thinking about how it gave flavor. And we're called as Christians to give flavor to the world around us, to bring our distinctive Christian faith and to share it with other people. But we have this challenge, this dilemma almost. There's a number of references in the Bible about us living in the world, but not being of the world. So this is the thing about we're not to take on all the things that the world does. Christians are called to be distinct, but we're in the world, but we don't belong to the world. We're not of the world. And I give a particular Bible reference there to John 17 and verse 14 and the verses that follow. But it's very clear across the Bible that there's this tension for us. Now, Christians have done extreme things in the past. And some people are called to religious orders where they bring themselves away from society. And other people have been thought that Christianity was about getting involved in everything and even picking up the values of the world around. And for me, neither of those things is what we should be doing. But then that gives us that whole tension. We live in this world where we've got to decide how far do we get immersed in the culture around us and how far do we retain our distinctive Christian faith and we're strong about what we believe. And that's a tension for us. So we live in the places where we make connections with other people. For me in the army, I try to make connections with soldiers. But there are some things in the army which are really good, and there's some things that happen amongst soldiers which are really bad. And so I have to retain my Christian belief within that whole environment. Some great values in the army about, you know, the way that they support each other, the friendships, the bonds that form between soldiers, that loyalty, that commitment, that can-do attitude that they'll get things done. But we also know that soldiers can also do things which they shouldn't do. They don't always stick to the moral code that we would stick to. And drink is a big problem in the army. There's a massive drinking culture. And there can be also, from time to time, bullying. We've heard about things through our news, where situations where people have overstepped the mark and have actually really damaged people's lives because they've used their power over them. And so wherever you find yourself, you'll find yourself amongst this mix of good things and things which we wouldn't want to ever be associated with. And so maintaining our Christian distinctiveness is something which is so important. And you have to face these problems as well, wherever you find yourself, because in every place you are in, there'll be those challenges about the things which are wrong and the things which are right. And so for Paul, as he writes to the church in Corinth, he's talking about a situation, he's talking into a situation where there were quite big divisions in the church in Corinth. If you go to at the start of Paul's first letter to the church at Corinth, in chapter 1, and in already by verse 10, myself onto the right page, he's talking about the divisions in the church. And there's all sorts of studies been done on what the divisions were. Some feel they were purely spiritual divisions happening in the church, where people were siding with one leader over another leader. It talks about in chapter 1, verse 12, is he says, one of you says, I follow Paul, another follow Apollos, another Cephas, and still another, I follow Christ. So there were divisions. Some studies have said that some of that was down to what part of society you came from, how wealthy you were, and it was a split between the rich and the poor. And some of the later discussion in the letter is about people and what food they eat, whether the meat they've bought has been sacrificed to idols or not. Well, the rich could pick and choose what they bought to eat. The poorest people got that meat because it was cheaper. And so, you know, why would one part of the church then despise another part of the church, saying, you shouldn't be doing this? And Paul puts them straight and says, there should be none of these divisions in the church. And so it's clear, Paul having set that church up in Corinth, this is probably written about 3 years later, this first letter, he's trying to look at what's going on in that church and say, you know, you're getting some things wrong. And the particular passage I chose from chapter 9 of the first letter is about this whole thing about how far you are immerse yourself in the culture of the day and how far you stick to your faith. And so sometimes in our society, when you hear that phrase about being all things to all men, it's often used in, I suppose, almost like a tone of compromise. If you're all things to all men, to all people, that sounds like you're being a bit wishy-washy, doesn't it? A bit, that's somehow how it's got to be used in our English language. Well, that's, you know, that doesn't reflect Paul, does it? We know Paul was not ever, he could never be accused of being wishy-washy, could he? He was very straight in what he believed and what he taught. And so what he's saying is, in situations, in this passage, he's talking about, you know, so he's using the background that he had to share the good news. So if he's speaking to Jews, he's got all that training as a Pharisee, as a teacher of the law. He's been steeped in all that training until, of course, because he was, of course, persecuting Christians, wasn't he? And of course, you know, he was converted, he came to Christ and became the chief missionary of the early church. A wonderful story, isn't it? But he said, if I'm going to speak to Jews, I know all that Jewish background and all their culture, so I'm going to use that. I've immersed myself in that culture and I know all about it, so why would I not use it then to share the good news? But in the same way, he's also an educated person who is part of that whole Greek culture that spread across the Mediterranean. He spoke very good Greek. He had that lawyer's mind, and he knew all about that Greek culture as well, or the culture of the Gentiles, the non-Jews. And so he said, well, when I'm speaking to those people, I'm going to use all that background and all that knowledge so that I can share the most important thing, which is telling people about the good news. And I think the challenge for us is that we find ourselves, you know, we've got all sorts of backgrounds and interests and jobs that we do, and we bring those connections that we make for all those interests we have that we enjoy. Maybe I shouldn't tell about work necessarily for everybody, but there are things, you know, our hobbies and interests that bring us in contact with people who are not Christians. Our work brings us in contact with non-Christians, and we should use those connections to try and share our faith. Not to be, as I say, drawn into doing things which are wrong, we know are wrong, but to, yeah, we're part of that. We wholeheartedly join into those activities, and we do our best in whatever we do. But one of the key things in all of this is to remember that we should always be sharing this precious gift, the good news of Jesus Christ, the person who's rescued us and saved us and removed all that sin that's trapped us. And he can do the same for other people. And it's so precious, that message. We should use, as Paul said, you do whatever you can to share that message. And it's not about compromise. It's about doing the important thing. Thanks, Morris. But with all this, I really believe this, that you need to give people room to find faith. And it's that sometimes some evangelism can happen where it's almost so intense and almost so aggressive that it doesn't always work very well. In fact, it often doesn't work because it hasn't really given people space for them to get to know you and to find out more about you. And we live in a society where actually a lot of our Christian values are so different to the values of our society that when people first come along to church, there's a whole lot of things where we're almost, I suppose we can almost clash if we weren't careful, if we didn't give people the room or the space. And so one of my favourite verses and go-to verses in the Bible is 1 Peter 3:15. And I'll read that for you. I learned this verse a long time ago, but it says, but in your hearts set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. And I think that we do sometimes have to be quite gentle and know that we live in a day and age when some of our Christian values are not the values of society around us. And so people need that space, that room to breathe almost, to come and experience what is the message that God is telling them, to give them room. Because it's God who it's God who changes hearts. It's not us, is it? We're purely instruments. We are the salt, but the real food is the message of God, isn't it? You know, we can add the flavour to it for people so that it's attractive to them, but it's God who does the converting. And I think that's really important. So gentleness and respect for where people are at is so important. Yeah, so, and part of that is just listening to people's stories. One thing I don't know if I've shared before with you is that sometimes you'll find notice boards outside churches where it says Jesus is the answer, and that's completely true. But sometimes we're not always working out exactly what is the question that people are asking. What is it? What is it that's really, you know, it's like almost like an itch they've got in their life that needs to be scratched. What is the thing that they're really wrestling with, really trying to tackle? And I believe that Jesus is the answer to our problems and to our questions and to our situations. But it's got to be a bit more specific than that for people, hasn't it? And the only way we discover what is that itch that people need to scratch is if we talk to them, engage with them, we welcome them, we talk to people, we find out where they're from, their backgrounds, their stories, that we treat them, you know, with that respect and gentleness to be prepared to find out about them. And so that's really about valuing people, isn't it? Everyone is created by God, all made in his image. Male and female, he created them. We were told that at the very start of the Bible, aren't we? In Genesis chapter 1. And every person is a child of God. Every individual. They may not know it at this stage, but everyone has been made by God. We've all been perfectly formed, haven't we, in our mother's womb. And God has known about each one of us. That brilliant Psalm 139 talks about that we are intimately known. And that's every single person. That's you, that's me, that's every person on this planet. And so if God has that interest in each individual person, so we should value people as well. And that's one of the great things for me as an army chaplain. Sometimes in a military system, people get a bit lost. And we're all given a number. My number is 30142815, Reverend K.P. Jones, RACHD. I had to learn that because when you're at Sandhurst, you're doing your training, you've got to stand outside your room and say that. But that can make you feel a little bit like a number. You're in a system. It's got to be that way because of the way the army works. But part of chaplaincy is saying to people, you're important. That the chaplain, the padre, has got time for you. Yeah. Can I come and see you, Padre? Can I have a chat about this? Of course you can. Make time for you, make space for you, value you. And that, for me, is something which Jesus did for people. You know, the people that he encountered, people, particularly those who are beyond the faith. I think of so many stories. You know, one sticks in my mind is in John chapter 4 and the woman at the well, you know, a Samaritan woman, and how Jesus spends time with her. He stays firm to what he believes. He's, you know, she's got a bit of a checkered past, if you remember. You know, who's actually her husband is the question, because of her relationships with other people. But Jesus spends time and takes trouble to value her and listen to her story. And does that change her life? Well, we certainly think from John's account, it sounds like that's made such a deep impression on her that she goes away a changed woman. And I think that's something we try to then do in the same way, isn't it? To value people, just for being them, because every single person is a child of God. Yeah, so loving your neighbour, we know that verse, don't we? You know, love God with all your heart, with all your mind, and all your soul, and love your neighbour as yourself. And that for me is, you know, if you know anything from the Bible, that could get you a long way, couldn't it? It's just a fantastic part of the Bible where Jesus is challenged about what is the greatest commandment, and that's his response, you know, instant response, because that gets to the very heart of it. You love God and you love your neighbour, and if the world did that, what a great place it would be. It'd be so much closer to the kingdom of heaven, wouldn't it? Thanks. I don't know if I mentioned this film before, but a film I watched, I was out in Australia last year and I went to open-air cinema. And the film was What We Did on Our Holidays. And it stars Billy Connolly, who's the granddad. But it's about a very dysfunctional set of adults who are getting into such a mess in their relationships. And it's the children who seem to be the same ones, although they do a ridiculous thing. And I won't spoil it for you, because it is a really good film. But at the end of the film, Lottie, the oldest child, when as all the adults are getting in such a state and really arguing with each other and falling out, she tells them that we're all ridiculous people. Yeah, we're all ridiculous people. If I get the phrase actually, because it's quite a good quote. It says the truth is every human being on this planet is ridiculous in their own way, so we shouldn't judge and we shouldn't fight. And so it's brilliant how in that film they put into the mouth of babes that beautiful bit of wisdom. Yeah, and we are all ridiculous people, aren't we? And that's, God has made us to be ridiculous in many ways. And we've got so much baggage and so many things in our past, and we do things which are a bit crazy, aren't they? And actually, as human beings, our biggest need, our biggest desire is to be loved, isn't it? And that's what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. Exactly what he's done. He's offered us his love through Jesus. You know, great. I'll say later this week, remembrance this week, greater love hath no man than he laid down his life for his friends. You know, what more could any of us need than that love from God in Jesus Christ? It answers all our needs, doesn't it? And it's such a tremendous thing. And that's where everybody is at, isn't it? We're ridiculous people, every one of us. And you know, we want more ridiculous people to come and join us in this ridiculous crowd, don't we? And it's wonderful. And that's what we're about, showing God's love. It's interesting. I was at a Rotary conference for the Heart of England. That's where I've been earlier today, up in Chester. Helen and I have been there because I was asked to speak on army chaplaincy. And I was talking about the fact that 100 years ago, it was the Battle of the Somme, and it was still going on. It finished it started in August 1916, carried on through to November the 18th. And I think, well, British and Commonwealth forces, we lost 420,000 men in that battle. Horrendous numbers. At the start of the First World War, army chaplains were told, well, they were ordered to stay back in the rear lines, be there for the soldiers when they came away from the trenches, visit the hospitals, do all those things which are good pastoral things to do. Well, a lot of chaplains were dissatisfied with that, and so they made sure that they put themselves in the front line. And so many famous stories. I mean, one of the famous characters from the First World War is Woodbine Willie, because he would take the cigarettes out. Jeffrey stood at Kennedy's his real name, but the soldiers nicknamed him Woodbine Willie. He'd always seem to turn up in the trenches with a pack of Woodbines. No, we don't do that nowadays. Much more like to turn up with a tub of sweets. But it's what theologians call, in their posh way, incarnational ministry. It's about saying, well, you know, that we need to be present in all situations, no matter how bad or awful they are, because that's being like God, and we're representing Jesus Christ to people. We're there as representatives of the church and of God. And in the same way that Jesus found himself in the most awful places, and the most awful place on the cross, in the place of suffering, and that, you know, what was it like to be in those trenches? I can't even imagine what it was like. And yet that's where chaplains felt called to be by God, because there they could share something of the love of God in those terrible places. And so that changed the whole ethos of the Army Chaplain Department, and became the Royal Army Chaplain Department after the war, because it was acknowledged just what chaplains had done. One of the chaplains I was asked to study when I was training was a man called Theodore Bailey Hardy. And he felt called by God to be an army chaplain in the First World War at the age of 50. A tiny, tiny little man ended up being the most decorated non-combatant. And he got the Victoria Cross, the Military Cross, the Distinguished Service Order. But he got his Military Cross because there was a wounded man stuck in the mud, so badly wounded, he was stuck in the mud in no man's land. There was no way of getting him out. Theodore Bailey Hardy crawled out to him and held his hand for 8 hours until that poor fellow died. And that was incarnational ministry, that posh word put into practice of saying God's love needs to be wherever the situation is. And in that terrible place, that's where he went. 50-year-old man crawled out to no man's land and did that. And did many other things as well. And that, for me, is a driving force for my ministry, but it's also for saying to us, where, you know, there was no place that God would not be, And if we find ourselves in those situations, then we're there to offer God's love to people. Thanks. But that love needs to be strong, doesn't it? You know, when my soldiers come to me and they tell me what they've been up to, it's no point me saying to them, oh, that's all okay. You know, the fact you've got two women on the go, whatever they might be doing. You know, soldiers do some morally questionable things. It's no point saying it's all okay. Sometimes love needs to be strong to say, look, you know, that isn't right. That's not the right way to live. And there's a better way to live. And it's for me in those situations to tell them about the love of God as well. And about you know, that they can be free from all the things that trap them in their lives. And so it's very important that love is strong. It's like a parent with a child, isn't it? You know, a parent with their child, the child can't do so everything they possibly want to do, can they? They have to be, the parent shows their love by being strong and saying, no, that thing you can do and that thing you can't do. And the same way that God calls us to be strong in our faith and say, no, these are the things that we believe and we will not go, you know, in another direction. And to be very clear about our Christian faith. And the love needs to be practical as well, doesn't it? You know, I heard in church the other week about, you know, this language about a generous God, how generous God is to us. But it's also about saying there are times when we find those opportunities where we can do those simple things to help other people. And very much for those of us who work as army chaplains, one of the things that we're called to do is that soldiers will ask things of us. They'll say, you know, can you help me with this or that or the other? And sometimes you think, well, that's not really my area, but I'll go and make sure that happens for you. And that builds up the trust with people. And, you know, if they acknowledge that, you know, that they're cared for by you, then they respond. And they say, oh, yeah, he did that for me. Then that makes a difference in their lives, doesn't it? And that's something we can all do. There are simple things we can do, simple acts of kindness, which make such a difference to people. And I think it was St. Francis of Assisi said, preach the gospel always. If necessary, use words. Because it's a very practical thing about showing God's love in caring ways. So to finish, thanks, Maurice. If you could put the next thing up. So Jesus teaches by his example, and the verse I chose, if you press the next thing, is from Matthew's Gospel, 11, verse 19. And it says, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners, but wisdom is proved right by her actions. Because Jesus was criticized, wasn't he? There was lots of people said, he shouldn't be in those places. You know, he should only be in the holy, pure places, and he shouldn't be mixing with those sort of people. And yet that's exactly where God wanted him, isn't it? Jesus to be where the ridiculous people were, where people like you and I are, and all of God's people. You know, Jesus knew to get the message of good news across, he had to go to the people who needed it, who needed to know that love, need to know that message. And there's no question at all that Jesus did anything wrong, is it? You know, he was the sinless man. And yet he put himself in those positions. And we know he was tempted because we have the whole story of his temptation. And yet he remained faithful to his Father in heaven. His love was strong. A love that valued people. A love that drew people in. And that's why I believe as we move to the end of our 60th anniversary year, it's lovely to see that the church is growing, isn't it? You know, as I say, I apologise if I call you ridiculous people, but that's what we are, isn't it? And it's lovely, isn't it, to think. But we've got to be careful, haven't we? So careful that we keep that as our primary aim of sharing God's love with people so that they too can experience God's love for themselves and be part of the kingdom of God. It's so important to know that they are valued and loved by our generous God. So my prayer for us as a congregation is that we keep on doing that. The doors are wide open. There's so many good things going on in life of this church. It's great to see what's going on. And people will discover God's love through the powerful witness that is being given out by this church. And thanks God. Thank God for this church. Amen.
You are listening to an online message from Limbrook Wood Baptist Church. For more messages, upcoming events, and weekly activities, please visit www.lwbc.org.uk. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter by searching Limbrook Wood BC. Thank you for tuning in.